Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to episode 43. This episode, ensemble member Jennifer Jordan brings us an interview with Marilyn Robert. Marilyn Robert has a Master of Fine Arts in Fibers and has been the recipient of many study grants and awards, including a recent Japan Foundation grant to research traditional indigo dyed textiles and contemporary fiber arts. In addition to teaching, she is also the co-owner of the Eugene Textile Center with Susie Lyles. If you're not familiar with the Eugene Textile Center, it is a wonderful resource for fiber artists in the Eugene area. They teach classes, they sell equipment and supplies. I've never been there, but looking at the website was quite dangerous. There's an intermediate tapestry weaving class that makes me wish Eugene was not a five-hour drive away.
Jennifer Jordan, I'm a Weavecast Ensemble member, and I'm here in Eugene, Oregon with Marilyn Robert in the Eugene Textile Center. Thank you, Marilyn, for agreeing to do this interview.
My pleasure.
You are a textile artist, and surface design is your strength, is that right?
Although I started out as a weaver in around 1970. And so for many years I was a weaver, primarily. And my MFA is in fiber arts, and that's when I started moving toward more surface design. After I got my master's degree, I got a job at Lane Community College teaching weaving. And so for 13 years there, I taught the weaving program there and introduced surface design techniques.
So can you tell me what surface design is?
Yes. If you look at cloth in terms of structure and surface, you can get a better idea of it, I think. So structure of cloth would involve weaving cloth, knitting, felting, crocheting, any kind of process that involves the actual construction of the basic cloth. Surface design addresses the surface of that cloth. So that could include things like dyeing on cloth, printing on cloth, stitching, chemical or mechanical manipulations of cloth, just a variety of things that change the surface or the texture of the cloth. And a lot of times the two are combined. Someone might weave a cloth and then embellish it with surface design techniques.
So of the surface design techniques that you've explored, which is your favorite or which do you tend to come back to all the time?
I probably come back to dyeing with indigo.
And you have a pot here too, right?
Yes, we have ongoing indigo vats here, different types of vats from time to time. But we always have an indigo vat going, and we have 2 days a month where people can just come in and do a drop-in indigo dyeing session here at in the surface design area.
Are there different kinds of indigo that give different results?
Yes. There's natural indigo and synthetic indigo. That's 2 broad categories. Within the natural indigo, there are many species of the plant that makes the dye. In just one of the, I think it's the genus, mm-hmm. Indigofera tinctoria, there are over 800 species of the plant. But for the art dyer or the home dyer, we buy the indigo generally in powdered form, although you can get it in other forms, either synthetic or natural. And then the vat is a sort of a complex vat. Indigo doesn't become soluble in water. It has to be in an alkaline solution, and there has to be a bacterial reduction of the indican, which is the precursor of indigo found in the leaves. So you have to kind of balance, you know, the alkalinity and the fermentation, and then the dyeing can occur.
So something, it's a vat you have to tend in that, but it's long-lasting.
Yes,
you can use it over and over.
You
keep the balance.
Feed it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You basically feed it. And there's different kinds of vats, too. There are vats with different additives to make the same result. The most labor-intensive is the organic indigo vat, and that uses all organic materials. Takes the longest amount of time to reduce.
Kind of smelly, too?
Yeah, it's the one that smells the most. There are a lot of indigo vats that don't really smell, but it does smell. I think it's a lovely smell, but other people disagree.
Probably not something you want to have in your back hall cooking away.
Well, a lot of people don't.
So with the indigo, I have just seen a few types of dyeing around here. The shibori resist dyeing. Uh-huh. And what are some other techniques that you like to use with indigo?
Weavers often use a technique called ikat, or in Japanese it's called kasuri. And it is a technique where you bind the threads either in the warp or the weft or both, and you bind them with a tape that resists the dye. You design it, you have a pattern in mind. You bind off the threads, put it in the dye. When it comes out of the dye, the threads are removed, and where the threads were is still white, or the color of the thread. And then, and the other part is blue, and then it's woven together to create a pattern. I had a Japan Foundation fellowship grant to study traditional indigo textiles in Japan and contemporary fiber art. And so I timed my visit to the harvest of indigo in Tokushima on the island of Shikoku in Japan. And I was really fortunate to be able to travel around and look at different indigo processes and some really wonderful
Of the plant is it? Is it the leaves?
It's the leaves, primarily.
What season do they harvest in?
Well, they harvest in the summer, but in the southwestern part of Japan, the summer season is so long and so hot that they get two harvests and sometimes three per year.
Is it a tree, a bush?
It's a bush, and it grows to about 3 feet tall. When the first harvest comes, they just cut off the stem close to the ground, and then it grows up again, not quite as big as the last time, and they usually save the seeds from the last harvest for the planting of the next year.
So it's not a perennial, something they have to plant every year.
Then. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So if somebody were just interested in beginning with surface design, what route would you suggest that they take?
Well, we started a new class here last month called Introduction to Surface Design. Because, like you asked me, there's a lot of questions about, you know, what is surface design? Well, and the thing is that it really is a broad range of activities. And people might like some and might not like some. I mean, it's like anything else, you know. So we've done this Introduction to Surface Design is a 2-day class, and it's a kind of a survey class. So people can try out dyeing on cloth, and we use different dyes for different cloths. So there's a variety of dyes that people use. And printing on cloth, and that printing might be stencils or blocks or using a heat press or screen printing. And then some resist techniques, like you mentioned before, shibori. We'll use some of those techniques to pattern the cloth when we're dyeing it. So we try to pack in as many possibilities for surface design in 2 days. And then somebody goes away with the idea of, gee, I really like this technique, and I'd like to learn more about it. And then they can sign up for one of those classes or study that further, and some things they're just not going to care about, but they have an appreciation for it after that.
How much work it is, or yeah. how difficult it yeah. is.
And that's really a fun class. I mean, a lot of people are enjoying that one.
So I know you're still an active artist. Mm-hmm. What are you working on now? Do you have an exhibit coming up?
I'm kind of working on two things. I'm going to teach a dye class, actually ECOT class, in Taos, New Mexico in September. And so I'm working on some natural dye pieces that'll be in a gallery in conjunction with that. And then I'm working on a show at the Jacobs Gallery in Eugene, which is a three-person show. There is a printmaker, a painter, and myself. And our show, the theme of our show is black and white. So I'm working on that.
And when would that be?
That's next May, so it's a year. It takes a long time to get a lot of work together.
Especially when you're so busy here, too.
Yes.
So.
And I like taking my time with things and letting them evolve.
Yeah.
So. And I'm finding that it's a little bit hard not to use color. And I wouldn't have thought that before, but it is.
It's a new challenge for you.
Yeah.
One thing you mentioned was that you do a lot of dyeing, and I think I have a lot of interest, and I think there's, in general, a lot of interest about natural dyeing. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, it's true. It's very popular. Natural dyeing is very popular in this community, and I think because it is very accessible. There's plants growing around everywhere, right? So... Or you can save onion skins in your kitchen or go to the grocery store and ask if you could collect their onion skins. There are a lot of books about natural dyeing with directions and recipes. And my favorite is Wild Color by Jenny Dean, but there are many others as well. We sell a lot of natural dyes that don't grow around here. For example, cochineal, which is a red dye that comes from an insect that grows on a cactus down in Peru and Mexico. And so we obviously don't have that here, so we purchase those. It's also possible just to take a little walk and go after, for example, walnuts, black walnuts in the fall when they fall to the ground. They can be collected and made into a wonderful dye.
The outside covering?
Yeah, they get soaked, and then the water gets drained off. So you just collect the whole generally composting part of the nut that falls.
Uh-huh. What color does that make?
That makes a range of tans and browns. It's a very nice color. But there are other minerals that modify the colors and set the colors of natural dyes. And there's just a handful of them. But you could experiment with the same natural dye many times over and get different results depending on whether you use iron to darken it or alum to brighten it. It's very easy and satisfying to work with those.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. I know the listeners will really enjoy this.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Today's Weavecast interview was recorded and produced by Jennifer Jordan, a member of the Weavecast Ensemble. If you'd like to get involved in recording interviews in your area of the world, and I would love to have somebody doing recordings in Europe and Australia and all of the other wonderful places I can't afford to fly to, please drop me an email at editor@weavezine.com.